Gracious Words. Gracious Words is taken from the weekly women's Bible study taught by Cheryl Broderson at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.
We behold your glory, God, in the face of Christ. It shows us who you are, revealing who you are.
On today's program, we begin a new message titled Obadiah, God's Unexpected Servant. In this study, we'll see how God often uses ordinary people in extraordinary ways to accomplish his purposes.
We will come before you, Lord, in wonder, wonder. We will fall on our knees and surrender. We surrender to you.
And now here is part one of Cheryl's message titled Obadiah, God's Unexpected Servant.
In June 25th, 1940, I figured out this was my father's 13th birthday. But anyway, it was a terrible day for France because it was the day that the Nazis invaded and conquered France and set up their Vichy government in France. Now, the Vichy government was the pseudo-government that was all French men and women who were supposedly sympathetic to Germany and to the aims of the Nazis. And they agreed to cooperate fully with the Nazis. Now, we've all heard of the Gestapo, right? I like to say Gestapo. Because that's how I heard it once on Hogan's Heroes. And most of you don't even know what I'm talking about. Oh, well, too bad. But the Gestapo was not omnipresent nor omniscient. You know, we see these movies and they look like they know everything and they have this web. But the Gestapo literally relied on the cooperation of citizens. They rewarded citizens that snitched on other citizens. So they sought to recruit 30,000 French who would snitch on their neighbors. Guess what? They tripled that amount. There were over 100,000 French that were willing to rat out their neighbors. In fact, the Germans were surprised because they did not even find that much cooperation in Germany. The French were more than ready. If they got angry at a neighbor, the threat was, I'm going to go tell the Germans. And they held it over each other. These French didn't even realize how bad things were until the food resources begin to be dried up and given to the Nazi soldiers, until they begin to see their neighbors rounded up and sent to concentration camps, or they saw a group of young students who were demonstrating against the Nazi occupation shot down in the streets and murdered, their sons and their daughters. And it was about this time that the French resistance began to develop. It had to be covert. It had to be underground. But they were resisting the Nazi occupation. These people were in key places, sometimes even in the Vichy French government itself. And they were horrified by the atrocities they witnessed by the Nazis. The resistance struggled at first because the parties involved were so prejudiced against each other and splintered. However, once the communists learned to work with the Protestants, who learned to work with the Catholics, who learned to work with the intellectuals, who learned to work with the farmers, who learned to work with the British, who learned to work with the Americans, the underground war against the Nazi occupation begin to gain ground and momentum. One of the major players in the French resistance was a woman named Josephine Baker. Does anyone know who Josephine Baker was? She was a famous jazz singer. And she came to prominence. She was black. And she came to prominence in France. She had gone through all sorts of prejudice in America. And she had moved to France where she was an instant sensation. But she agreed to work with the French resistance. And even some of the songs she chose were sending secret messages to the French resistance and helping them to know other key members that they could cooperate with. Also, which bridge they were supposed to blow up. She was amazing. One of the best underground covert spies during World War II. Now, in the book Mere Christianity, C.S. Lewis likens believers to the French resistance. Though the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, we are now in occupied territory. Satan has come in, and he is occupying the land that belongs to God. Not only because God created it, but because Jesus redeemed it. So what do we need to do in the meantime? Well, C.S. Lewis says we need to work together cooperatively, sometimes covertly, in order to resist the enemy, in order to sabotage the work of the enemy. And we need to be listening on shortwave radio, which he likens to prayer. And we need to be listening to the messages from our leaders in order to receive our divine instructions from God on what our part is in this resistance against the forces of evil and the awaiting of the government and kingdom of the God who owns everything, the righteous forces, to come and take back what is theirs. So you have all been recruited into the covert actions of the living God. And cooperation is imperative, or we will not have success. And it is also imperative that we listen to what God is speaking individually to each of us, as well as generally, globally, publicly, to all of us. What is the Spirit of the Lord saying is our part in this resistance of evil and this sabotage of the forces of evil and the ushering in of the kingdom of our God and his Messiah, his son, Jesus. Part of our work is to recruit others to the cause of bringing the government of Jesus Christ to earth. And of course, the other is to receive his word and work with others. It is of note that most of the French resistance workers did not know each other. And the reason that they did not know each other, they gave false names to each other, is because if they were caught, they could not disclose the names of others. You know, if they were tortured, they'd be of no help to the Nazis. The volunteers were all expected to follow orders and work with whoever showed up who knew the secret passwords. And the criteria was given to them by others and the instruction. You know, division, prejudice, and denouncement has kept the church from effectively fighting the forces of evil. We just don't cooperate with each other. We grandstand. We are too quick to label, to generalize, to assume, and presume. We have forgotten the true purpose of our mission. We have misjudged those who are actually on our side and the side of Jesus. We have refused to cooperate and work alongside others for the sake of seeing God's kingdom established on earth. That's what I love about the Jesus People movement. It was so pure. I mean, Paulina knows this. We've talked about this. There was such a purity. You would stand in line for the Saturday night concerts next to Catholics and to Baptists and to Pentecostals. It was so beautiful because you know what? It was all for one and all for God. We worked and cooperated with each other. You know, Calvary is purposely non-denominational. My dad wrote it in every bylaw that we weren't allowed to be a denomination. I mean, I think that Dad would come down from heaven and just, you know, rain havoc on us if we ever tried to become a denomination, because his desire was that everyone who just wanted to learn the Word of God could come to this place. You know, years ago, my dad had the opportunity. My dad was Chuck Smith. If you don't know, you should. But my dad had the opportunity to meet with the head of Israel, which was Menachem Begin. He had this audience. Oh, it was so prestigious. We're like, Dad, you know, whoa, can I touch you? Ah. You know, it was just so exciting to go. And he sat down and Menachem says, you know, thank you for your support of Israel. What can I do for you? My dad said, well, there's this plot of land that I've noticed next to the Jordan River. And I'd like to pay for you to, I'll even pay for the purchase, our church will. I want you to do a baptismal site there. And I want any church that comes to Israel to be able to be baptized at that site. Because you know what we have to do right now? We have to change on the bus. It's so inconvenient, and the people get hurt sliding down the mountain. It's slippery. But if we had a baptismal site, and I will pay for it. And Menachem Begin says, let me look into it. And then my dad and Menachem Begin stayed in communication for the next 2 months as they purchased the site and as they begin to build. And then my dad wrote out the check. And he said, I have one stipulation. My name is not allowed to be on it. When you go to Israel, the only thing that's there is an olive tree that's dedicated to my dad. Right next to one dedicated to Benny Hinn. Isn't that so, God? Isn't that just so, God? But when you're there, you see churches from India. You see churches from Pakistan. You see Fred Price's church there with their 10 buses. You see every denomination. Not the Lutherans because they sprinkle. And not the Anglicans because they also sprinkle. But you see all of those that are into mercy there at that baptismal site. And I remember going there for my first time without Dad after my father died. And I sobbed and sobbed. And there was one picture of my dad baptizing somebody. And I sobbed. I could not hold it together. I just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. And to hear all these different languages singing praise to God and being baptized. And I'm like, Lord, could you tell Dad he did good? Could you just send a message to him? He did good. He did good, that this is what he saw. This is what he wanted. And I was so, so blessed. I'm sorry, I'm glad you're crying with me, some of you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We are too quick. We're too quick. We've forgotten our true purpose, and our true purpose, if you love one another, all men will know that you are my disciples by your love. We have misjudged. We can't go forward or hope for success if we remain so skewered. Our forces need to simply see the bigger picture. Some need to repent of division, prejudice, and denouncement. Some need to be willing to receive instructions from God and his agents. And all of us need to learn to cooperate and work together for the work of bringing God's kingdom, not man's kingdom. Because every administration on earth, my dad said, the minute someone becomes a politician, they become corrupt. We are here to bring God's kingdom to earth. There's one Messiah, and his name is Jesus. One Messiah. There's one hope for this world, and it's Jesus. There is one hope for the United States, because you're not going to change the hearts of people by a different administration or by rules from the outside. It's got to be a transformed heart, and there's only one person who can transform a heart, and that's Jesus Christ. No one else can transform a heart. In 1 Kings 18:1-18, it's the unexpected story of Obadiah, as we just read. He's an official in an ungodly, idolatrous administration of Ahab. Wouldn't it be so easy to dismiss him? If you're godly, how can you work for that ungodly king? This is the most wicked administration that Israel has ever had. How can you work for his welfare? How can you cooperate with him? He is evil. Like evil, 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 bad, 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 bad. Wicked, awful, terrible. Obadiah is trustworthy to Ahab. Ahab can instruct, you know, two people go and search out for water in the land and for the livestock. And who are they? Ahab and his right-hand man, Obadiah, who is in charge of Ahab's welfare, to preserve Ahab alive, to make sure Jezebel eats, to make sure the palace has food. It is of note that the reason they're searching out sources of food and water is so that Ahab can keep the animals alive, not the people of Israel. He doesn't care about the people. He cares about the animals. Why? Because the animals facilitate his army. And at this point, it's recorded in the annals of Shalmaneser, who was a Syrian, that Ahab could muster an army of 2,000 chariots. Obadiah does not offer resistance to Ahab. He does not argue with the king about the inhumanity of such an effort. He complies with the king's order. Obadiah, think about this, works in an ungodly administration set upon promoting Baal worship. In fact, the prophets of Baal have so much prestige. They eat at Ahab's royal table. In a country where the citizens are starving, 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of Asherah have no want of provision. They are fed the best of the land. And Obadiah has to make sure there's enough provision for everyone in the palace. I mean, you would think, like, Obadiah, if you were godly, you'd poison the stew. But no, instead, he remains faithful. These prophets receive all the perks and advantages of royalty. They're held up as, look what you would get if you would turn to Baal. At the same time, this is an administration that is eradicating the worship of Yahweh, murdering the prophets and godly men in the country. How justifiable it would be for Elijah to desire the destruction not only of Ahab, but of all who cooperate in the administration of Ahab. But Ahab is not like, I'm sorry, Obadiah is not like Ahab or Jezebel, not like them in the least. He has used his position in the administration of Ahab to find out the plots of Jezebel and Ahab, to find out where the prophets of God are, to warn them, to smuggle them to a cave, and to provide provision at his own cost for them to eat, for them to drink, for them to be safe. Imagine the danger, the sacrifice, the expense, the difficulty of such an endeavor. This is what Obadiah is doing in this administration. He is saving and preserving the godly. It was Cynthia in our group discussion today. She said, do you think Ahab knew he was a believer? Maybe, maybe not. Because maybe he would have been suspect if he was open about his belief. You know, maybe they'd be like, who's the snitch? How did the prophets of God know to hide? In this encounter with the prophet of Elijah, Obadiah discloses his righteous activity, what he has done. Nobody else is safe in knowing it. He's like, don't you have a network of prophets? Don't you know what I've done? Because Ahab doesn't know, but I expected you to know that I'm on your side. I'm on Yahweh's side. He shows his respect for Elijah by calling him Lord. He explains that he served Yahweh from his youth. He pleads for mercy. He reveals to Elijah the demeanor of Ahab toward the prophet, as well as Ahab's efforts to find him. Ahab has sought Elijah everywhere, even going so far as making the kings of nearby nations swear an oath that they are not hiding Elijah, that they have searched for Elijah and been unsuccessful in finding him. Because Ahab, as we know, blames Elijah for the drought and the famine. He is an unreasonable king who refuses to see the reality of Yahweh, his own culpability, or his wife's culpability, and that he alone is the troubler of Israel. Furthermore, Obadiah believes in the anointing of the Spirit on Elijah's life, so much so that God will protect his prophet and he'll be killed in his stead. Obadiah does not want to go to Ahab with the news that Elijah is back in town and wants to meet. Such news could expose Obadiah and his covert activity for Yahweh. It could cost him his life. Elijah assures Obadiah of his intention. As the Lord of hosts lives before whom I stand, I will surely present myself to him today. Obadiah then arranges the meeting. Do you realize without Obadiah's intervention, connection to Ahab and cooperation, what happens in the rest of chapter 18 could not happen? It is Obadiah who sets this up. If he wasn't in this key place, if he didn't have access to Ahab, if you didn't have someone working covertly in this place, none of this could happen. God has many Obadiahs serving in unexpected places, sometimes because they serve in a corrupt administration or industry. We wrongly devalue or conclude that they cannot be sincere or working on behalf of Yahweh.
God's call on our lives may not always be public or celebrated, but it is always important. Like Obadiah, we can choose faithfulness over fear, trusting that God sees every act of obedience and uses it for his glory. We hope you have been blessed by today's Bible study. For more information about the Gracious Words radio program and the teaching ministry of Cheryl Broderson, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. Coming up next time on the Gracious Words program, we'll continue our study on Obadiah, God's unexpected servant, as we see how God rewards those who serve him faithfully, even in hidden places. We do hope you make plans to join us. Again, for more information, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.